Iran says the upcoming meeting of the JCPOA Joint Commission will discuss what measures to be taken before Tehran rolls back the reduction of its nuclear commitments. The U.S. and Saudi Arabia voice support for Jordan's King Abdullah following security crackdown on Jordanian officials and royal family members. All schools and non-essential stores are closed in France as the European country enters its third national lockdown to tackle a surge in COVID cases. Good to have you with us. Now, beginning with our top story, Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister says that Tehran will hold no direct or indirect talks with the U.S. And this is while the signatories to the nuclear deal are preparing to meet in Vienna on Tuesday.
We will have no direct or indirect talks with the Americans in Vienna. We will hold negotiations with the Joint Commission of the Iran Nuclear Deal, and we'll lay out our demands and conditions for return to our nuclear deal commitments. Our demands and conditions are that the U.S. fulfill all its obligations under the JCPOA first by removing all sanctions it imposed on Iran. Then we will verify the sanctions removal and return to our commitments.
Araghchi made the comments after briefing the Iranian Parliament's National Security Commission on the upcoming talks. Former U.S. President Trump exited the nuclear deal in 2018 and reimposed sanctions a year after the U.S. move. Iran took remedial measures to reduce its commitments. Tehran says its economic benefits under the accord are key to reversal of the nuclear steps that it has taken. From Irvine, I'm now joined by Alexander Azadegan, who is a senior geopolitical analyst. Good to have you with us, Alexander. So how do you look at this upcoming meeting in Vienna? What is expected to happen? And also, let's not forget the fact that the U.S. has invited itself to the venue, Iran, stressing, like I just announced, that we're not going to have any talks.
It's good to be with you, Behrouz, and our global audience. Well, It's complicated. Europe's top three's agenda has always been to neutralize Iran in its nuclear capabilities, short-term and long-term, even though it's hardly anything left of Iranian nuclear program before 2015. Their second goal was to neutralize Iran's defensive power by thinking they can negotiate over Iran's ballistic missile deterrent capabilities, count on that one being put on the table, especially by the French. Emmanuel Macron has been very vocal on this issue, which should never be part of the JCPOA negotiation of any kind. By the way, the negotiations are over, as everybody knows. Mm-hmm. And then the third European goal, in my opinion, is to diminish and take away Iran's regional presence. The fact that the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action became comprehensive in itself was against the advice and the direction from the highest echelon of the Iranian power. It was supposed to be only negotiation over the nuclear issue. From that, we went into these other issues, and Europeans and Washington expect that they would address all these other issues, such as Iran's role in Syria, in Iraq, in Yemen, and elsewhere, where it has tremendous soft power. So we're dealing with that. You know, every day that goes by, that JCPOA is not really enforced as far as taking away the sanctions against Iran, is a day wasted, which is what they wanted from the very beginning. They wanted to slow down the process of Iran's advancement. And basically, since 2015, they have been successful with that. Will we see a difference with the Biden administration and Secretary of State Blinken? Their approach will be different, but the goal is the same as it was under the Trump administration. I also believe that the E3 countries in the JCPOA plus Washington are trying to, by doing what they're trying to do and showing initiative that they want to get back to the table, they're trying to manipulate the results of the upcoming Iranian elections. I believe it's in June 18th, if I'm correct. So they're trying to do, you know, they're trying to show a softer side, a more negotiating side. And I think what Dr. Araghchi presented at the Iranian parliament, at the Security Council Commission, you know, in putting up a harder stance than, let's say, has been put since 2015, it's to bolster Iran's insistence that you can't just walk in and out of an international accord that was signed in 2015. It was reneged by Donald Trump in 2018. You can't just decide, you know, to come out of it when you want, come back in when you want, as seems to be the case with the Biden administration. And mm-hmm. even before this man got elected, we all knew that him being in the White House is just, you know, trying to, I think leader several years ago said that the Democrats, and at that time it was President Obama, you know, it's the same iron fist, but with a velvet cover. Right. So I don't have any hope with what's going to happen in Vienna. And I think it's just a waste of time. Every day that goes by is a day that the Iranian economy is going to go further and further down. And of course, I think their precondition of or their commitment to lift the sanctions was at a price of Iran becoming part of their so-called international community, which is really a group of vassal states. And I don't think the Iranians, regardless of how difficult the economic sanctions have been, would want to diminish their role. The goal of any sanction against any government around the world is to, you know, sociologically destroy a culture and turn it into a social Darwinistic situation, so people would rise up and would the pressure, it would be like some kind of a grassroots thing. It's going to be manipulated by the outsiders, and they were counting on people to rise up. They tried so hard to have their mercenaries in the streets of Tehran during the past several years, especially since 2015. That didn't work out. And so they have just a few months, literally 3 months left until the Iranian election. And so they're trying to manipulate that by, creating a perception that things will be very different under this administration in order for the Iranian reformists to once again, you know, take the helms of the power of the Iranian executive branch, but my forecast is that probably will not happen, and that Iran will have tougher people in places of power, most likely a military man as the president, and that the window of opportunity that the West had, really, it's not just, you know, Washington, it's also the Europeans. That window of opportunity has passed. And if there's going to be any negotiation, which there shouldn't be, in my opinion, if there's going to be any sitting down together, whether it's at Vienna or elsewhere in Europe, it's not going to be in the same format and in the same spirit of openness from Iran.
Okay. I appreciate your comments and insights. Alexander Azadegan, senior geopolitical analyst in Irvine. Now, Jordan's former crown prince says that he's under house arrest as the authorities have detained several ranking officials over an alleged plot against King Abdullah.
I had a visit from the chief of the general staff of the Jordanian armed forces this morning, in which he informed me that I was not allowed to go out to communicate with people or to meet with them, because that in the meetings that I had been present in,
in a video recording, Prince Amjad bin Hussein said that his bodyguards and a number of friends were also detained. The prince, who's the king's half-brother, said that he was not part of any foreign conspiracy, but denounced the ruling system as corrupt. The Jordanian military, in a statement, said that the prince was told to cease actions that would hurt the kingdom's security and stability. The statement said that Hamza was part of a broader ongoing security investigation. A top former Jordanian royal aide was among those arrested. The U.S. and a number of Arab states have voiced support for King Abdullah over the developments. A political commentator, Michael Springman, says that former Jordanian crown prince Ben Hussein is likely to have been victimized due to his opposition to corruption in his country.
The best I can get out of it is that the former crown prince, who's been confined to his house apparently, was extremely critical of the old guard of corruption in the country, and he's met with a lot of resistance because of his criticisms. And that may well play into this. Jordan has been fairly stable as regards countries in the region, and it has been a key country for the United States in training terrorists and helping train American soldiers in the region. The monarchs of the region, and if you want to include Egypt and his the dictator Sisi, he's been supporting the king of Jordan, as well as has Bahrain, which is not exactly a bastion of democracy. So I think that they're all holding together in the hopes that if one falls, it won't lead to a domino effect and bring the rest of them down.
France has entered its third national lockdown as it is tackling a surge in COVID-19 cases. All schools and non-essential stores will shut down for 4 weeks, and a curfew will be in place from 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. As of Tuesday, people will also need a valid reason to travel more than 10 kilometers from home. The new wave of the disease threatens to overwhelm the country's hospitals. France is currently battling a peak of around 5,000 COVID patients in intensive care units. On Friday, the country recorded 47,000 new cases and 304 deaths. And those figures pushed the tally to 96,000 and the total caseload to more than 4.7 million. In Bulgaria, people are heading for the polls to elect a new parliament amid predictions of low turnout on coronavirus pandemic fears. More than 6.7 million Bulgarians are eligible to cast their ballots. Prime Minister Boyko Borisov's center-right party is tipped to finish first. Opinion polls, however, suggest the party in power for almost a decade will fall short of a majority. Its popularity has been eroded by a series of scandals, with protests last summer accusing the government of protecting oligarchs. Observers say that the party may struggle to build a stable coalition in a more fractured parliament. The election is held as hospitals in the EU's poorest country are overwhelmed with COVID patients. Now, turning to the U.S., security has been tightened at the Capitol in Washington, D.C., following a deadly attack on a police checkpoint on Friday. Workers were seen installing high razor wire-topped fencing and additional concrete barriers around the Capitol building. That reinforcement comes one day after a police officer was killed and another was injured in a car ramming incident. The attack is the worst security threat at the Capitol since the January 6th deadly protests when supporters of then-President Trump overran the complex. The violence left 5 people dead, including a police officer. Now, turning to Africa, normal services in government hospital in Nigeria have been affected following a nationwide strike by resident doctors. Denjum Abdullahi has an update on the situation from Abuja.
Most government hospitals have remained largely empty because of a nationwide strike action by resident doctors who constitute a large percentage of medical doctors in government hospitals in Nigeria. Consultancy rooms have remained empty because of the absence of medical doctors to attend to patients. Doctors' union officials said they are tired of the government failing to live up to its promises of settling their salaries and other benefits on time.
Now people are now saying we are neglecting our patients or this and that, but we are saying that our public should help us tell the government to do the needful. Pay me my money so that I'll be 100% mentally, spiritually, physically, and financially okay to be able to do my duty.
Representatives of the Nigerian government met with labor leaders behind closed doors in a last-minute effort to avert the strike. But apparently, the meeting ended in a deadlock. The government appealed to the doctors to consider the damage their withdrawal of services will cause to Nigeria's health system. But the resident doctors said the government should keep its several promises.
We have an agreement signed last year. Now they want to give us another agreement. Same thing. Now the resident doctor is saying that we don't want agreement again. We want implementation of that agreement.
This strike is coming at a challenging period, especially with the COVID-19 pandemic with only about 800,000 Nigerians vaccinated in a country with a population of close to 200 million. Nigeria has 163,000 COVID-19 cases, out of which 2,038 people have died so far. The doctors' union said all the resident doctors at the COVID-19 centers have joined the strike and withdrew their services. This doctors' strike is in progress just when the Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari is receiving treatment in a London hospital. According to union officials, close to 16,000 resident doctors are participating in this strike, which is indefinite. Most of the resident doctors are specialists who provide important healthcare services, especially in emergency wards. Benjamin Abdullahi, Abuja.
Some 5 decades after the Vietnam War ended, the toxins that the U.S. used during the battles continue to claim victims. Gradually admitting to spraying chemical agents in Laos, Washington has refused to provide compensation to those affected during the war.
Shortly after taking office as South Vietnam's president in 1955, pro-American Ngo Dinh Diem began a crackdown on suspected members of the Viet Minh Communist Coalition of the North. The Cold War was in full swing, and the United States, which was concerned about a rise in communism, gradually ramped up its military presence in Vietnam. Washington finally found the excuse to justify a war in the region following an incident in the Gulf of Tonkin in 1963 when two U.S. destroyers were targeted by a torpedo attack by the North Vietnamese forces. The U.S. Congress then approved the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, which authorized U.S. military action in the region. The conflict that ensued has been regarded as one of the bloodiest wars the U.S. has ever been involved in. American troops resorted to using warfares, including napalm and chemical toxins, to confront their enemy. Perhaps the most notorious was a chemical substance called Agent Orange that was used during Operation Ranch Hand to defoliate jungles to uncover Vietnamese troops and destroy crops between 1961 and 1971. The substance contained dioxin, which is one of the most toxic chemicals known to man and had been linked to severe birth defects, cancers, and mental and physical disabilities.
You have to understand that America has a different standard for the rest of the world than it does at home. At home, America adheres to fairly high level standards when it comes to herbicides, for example, of which Agent Orange is one. But when it comes to the poor nations of the world, such as Laos or Cambodia, a completely different standard applies.
The U.S. failure in the war and its atrocities in terms of the number of civilian deaths and the use of chemical weapons has tarnished America's image at home and abroad to date.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Aperture.
Welcome back to Aperture. In the first part of the program, we saw how herbicides used by the Australian government decimated its employees and left children and partners critically ill. Assured by the government that it was safe, it was common for Australian workers in the 60s and 70s to use toxic herbicides without using proper protective clothing. Since then, a terrifyingly high number of these former government employees have died or become seriously ill, almost certainly as a result of their constant exposure to dioxin, a deadly chemical impurity found in herbicide 2,4,5-T. Of course, 2,4,5-T has now been banned, but stay with us as we investigate how a lack of regulation and testing of cheap imports means potentially deadly levels of the dioxin may still be present in weed control products today.
Yeah, all clear there and left me.
Yep.
Molly Dunn believes she knows more than most in Yarram about the toxic aftermath of spraying 2,4,5-T and 2,4-D. She had a stillborn baby 5 months into a pregnancy. At the time, her husband Percy Dunn was a sprayer for the Victorian Lands Department at Yarram.
They didn't actually have protective clothing back then. No clothes, no masks, no nothing much, you know.
Percy Dunn died of cancer in 1980. The 60-year-old had been ill for many years after spraying the herbicides in paddocks and along creeks to kill blackberries and ragwort weed infestations. 2 years after he died, Molly took the Victorian government to court and was awarded $17,500 in workers' compensation. But no liability was admitted. All these years later, she's still grieving his death. Percy Dunn's family is believed to be the only one in Yarram to have received government compensation.
Do you think it's wrong that families like yours only get compensation when they're prepared to go to court?
Yeah, well, that's the government, you know. They don't want to pay out anything unless they have to.
And there'd be surpluses in those drums too.
It's very similar to the asbestos cases that I've been involved in. The denial is put forward. And the worker's got a battle to prove beyond reasonable doubt, and it's very hard to do in chemical cases.
In Yarram, many of the sprayers have died.
Very short breath, though.
Yeah, probably too.
Tony Cassidy and Pat Reed are the lucky ones, sick but still alive.
Anyway, he's looking at you, Doc.
Righto.
I've got cancer of the bladder. In fact, I've got to go tomorrow for more exploratory surgery.
How many of your mates that you used to spray with have been sick or have died?
Oh, well, all of them are sick. Some are probably not as sick as me, but they're all sick. And I'd say probably 75% of them have died.
Any breeze where you've got it all over you, you're wet through some bloody days.
What, just covered in stuff?
Yeah.
Sprayer Pat Reed thinks he was unwittingly dragged into a cover-up when he was told by his boss to bury about 80 of the drums on Crown land just outside of Yarram.
Tree over there, the clean one.
Oh, right, okay.
About there.
About there?
Yeah.
You can Pat took us to the site of where he buried them more than 30 years ago.
They put the axe wheels up on the truck and threw them into the hole, and I crunched them up with a dozer and then filled it all in.
Nothing there?
We knew there was something going on, digging a hole out to put drums in, so something funny.
Out in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah.
Why do you think the Lands Department asked the men to bury the drums?
The drums there?
Because the heat was on. Get rid of them. We don't want them on the premises because people were starting to snip around and ask questions.
It should never have been used for manual spraying or aerial spraying. It was a poison that you couldn't contain.
It wasn't until the 1990s that 245T, which was thought to be more toxic than 24D, was banned by all states in Australia. This was some years after the United States took it off its market. What made 245T so toxic was the heating of the reaction mixture during manufacture, which created dangerous dioxins.
You can not ensure that dioxins are not being formed even if you employ the best production processes. I think this is one of the reasons why 245T was banned, because what you require is an additional step, which is a purification step, and that is relatively costly.
Kills the entire weed, roots and all.
What many people don't realise is that the second chemical in Agent Orange, 24D, which was developed in the 1940s, is still widely used.
A plane dusts a field of young wheat with 24D.
24D is a cheap and effective weed killer.
The destruction of many weeds is complete.
There are more than 200 24D products registered in Australia.
It's used in many agricultural applications. It's used in pastures and cropland for broadleaf control. It's also used in areas that people probably wouldn't expect, such as turf spraying for sporting fields, for councils in their cosmetic applications, for verges and those sorts of things.
Many of the major chemical companies are represented by a peak body, CropLife Australia.
Weeds are a massive cost. If you had to manage them in other ways, we're talking, you know, just for a normal farm, thousands of work hours.
Hey there.
Hi.
So this is a sample.
Right.
It's generally assumed that there's no dangerous dioxins in 24D due to today's improved manufacturing standards. But 3 years ago, a team of Queensland scientists set out to prove there were no dioxins in pesticides and were amazed at what they discovered.
We actually didn't believe the results. We said there must have been a cross-contamination because these levels are not possible anymore today. They were, for some of the pesticides, similar to what was known from 245T, which was banned in the 80s, 90s.
Associate Professor Carolyn Gall sent her researchers back to the laboratory to repeat the tests. And when they returned positive, she expanded the study to include other pesticides, including 24D. Tests on one 24D product came back showing moderate levels of dioxins. This product was made by a Brisbane company, but it may have had its active ingredient imported. There's no way of knowing, as the regulator classifies this as commercial in confidence. Many Australian companies today import their active ingredients from countries like China and India.
What that really means is that it depends on the manufacturer, as well as the year of manufacture, as well as the batch or the country of manufacture, on how much dioxin you actually produce or have left as an impurity in the 24D formulation.
We've been told many, many times over the years that industry has cleaned up its act, that they have new processing equipment, new techniques, new technology that will eliminate dioxin from their herbicides and therefore from our environment. But I think the latest studies that are showing these contaminant levels indicate that that's not the case, that industry hasn't come clean about the nature of the contaminants of dioxin in 2,4-D, and the government really needs to take a close look at this.
Despite the low to moderate levels found in 2,4-D, its widespread use rang alarm bells.
So if you have a moderate toxicity but you use very high volumes, then the risk could be the same as having very high toxicity but very low volume of use.
2,4-D was tested, and the level of dioxins that were found were lower than elsewhere in the world. So that gave us some comfort.
That gave you some comfort?
Some comfort.
That they found moderate levels of dioxin in 2,4-D?
That it was low to moderate.
The regulator, the Australian Pesticides and Veterinary Medicines Authority, decided to see for itself if dioxins were present. It repeated the Queensland tests.
The APVMA came in and also tested for dioxins in a range of chemicals, and we worked with the health department as well in assessing the outcomes of that. And
when you tested, did you find dioxins as well?
I understand that when the testing was done, we did find some levels of dioxins, and that's when it's been referred to the health department.
Did you find it in 2,4-D?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Exposure to dioxin is consistent with this pattern of adverse health effects, and I think that there are solid scientific reasons to be concerned about dioxin exposures following 2,4-D use.
Four Corners decided to test for dioxin contamination in one of the many imported products. We purchased 2,4-D weed killer from this warehouse in Sunshine just outside of Melbourne and sent it to government laboratories for testing. The 2,4-D weed killer, Aminos 625, was imported from China by an Australian company, Senonda, based in an office in Melbourne. We purchased the 2,4-D weed killer, which is often sold direct to farmers, no questions asked. It's almost 3 weeks on, and we've just received our results from the government laboratory. Alarmingly, our sample of 2,4-D weed killer came back with dioxin levels almost seven times higher than those found by the Queensland scientists. And what's even more disturbing is we don't know how many contaminated 2,4-D products are out there in the community because authorities are not routinely testing. Four Corners gave the results to Associate Professor Carolyn Gauss to analyse.
I was actually surprised because you only analysed one formulation and actually returned such a high result. I thought it was unlikely today, but again, that is a reality check when we think back to our previous study where we actually didn't expect any contamination in the pesticides. It just demonstrates again that what we're seeing today is equally or even worse than 10 to 20 years ago, and that is of concern, of course.
Each year, more than $100 million worth of 2,4-D products are sold in Australia, and we don't know which ones contain imported ingredients.
We have seen a new scenario develop in Australia with high Australian dollar, massive production increase in places like China, and fairly free trade between the two countries, that a large amount of product is now coming in. The country of origin, as I suggested, doesn't automatically imply good or bad. What we do need to ensure is that we deal with reliable suppliers.
But it's not just about having a reliable supplier. Scientists say we should be monitoring for dioxins in all pesticides. And that's the job of the regulator.
Without monitoring each of the batches or regular monitoring, we pretty much don't have any chance to really realise what is being on the market and how much of the dioxin is being released with pesticide use.
The APVMA hasn't found any evidence of high levels of dioxin in imported chemicals.
Are you testing for it?
The APVMA doesn't do independent testing. However, it is concerns about potential quality of imported goods is often referred to us from many different sources.
But how do you know if they've got dangerous dioxins in them?
If there were high levels of dioxins, it would affect the final chemical, and we would expect to see in the public use concerns about the efficacy or the chemical itself, and we're not seeing that.
Who should test for dioxin in these imports, the companies or the regulator?
Well, I would suggest that any regulatory system should have an independent testing regime to it.
We also don't know how much 2,4-D is being sprayed around Australia.
The lack of volume data makes it really hard to make any kind of sensible risk management decisions. If you've got a chemical where there's an identified problem and you don't know how much is being used or where it's used or in what circumstances it's being used, it's very difficult to develop sensible regulatory, make sensible regulatory decisions.
I would suggest to you those who are advocating the need for it don't realise that it's actually not necessary, or in fact you're just going to bury the regulator in data and them not able to make a good decision.
Regardless of how much is sprayed, it's too much for David Brewer, an organic wine producer in South Australia's Riverland. Last year at Loxton, he lost his entire harvest because 2,4-D sprayed on another property drifted onto his grapes. David Brewer used to lecture in chemistry at Roseworthy Agricultural College in South Australia.
A foreign chemical, it's something that we would have no part of, and yet it's on our grapes, it's on our sultanas, and it can only have come from somebody else's property. It's a trespass.
Tests found that David Brewer's table grapes had very small residues of 2,4-D. But he's concerned it could have been one of the cheaper generic imported products.
What is it about these imported 2,4-D products that are so attractive?
Well, A, they're cheap. They're cheaper to start with, and B, they go further, so they're more efficient, if you like, in killing weeds.
But more effective in contaminating other properties as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a real problem. Like, once it's finished at their place, it comes over here and has a go at ours.
There was a ban on spraying 2,4-D esters, the most prone to drift, at the time David Brewer's grapes were contaminated. It's almost impossible to trace the origins of vapour drift, as it can travel up to 100 kilometres.
Well, most cases of spray drift are usually because people aren't obeying what's on the label, or it could be accidental.
2,4-D drift has damaged thousands of hectares of cotton, market gardens and vineyards around the country. The South Australian market gardener, who does not want to be named for fear of losing customers, says he's constantly losing produce from drift from farms as far as 10 kilometres away.
The cos leather's growing nicely.
Bottom line is, they can't use a chemical that does damage to other people. There's no compensation for anybody that gets damaged, so it should really be eliminated.
You can see the weird growth deformations. It's got these protruding growths sticking up from the side of the tomato.
This grower says the drift is causing many deformities in his vegetables.
You've got female where they're supposed to be male, so they're mixed up with the pollen. And you also do get corn deformities where you'll get multiple cobs on a single cob.
The mysterious part of it is that 2,4-D can render significant damage to a vineyard, a cherry orchard, a tomato field, at levels that can't be measured in the air. It's that toxic to plants, particularly if the drift and exposure episode occurs when the plant is going through the fruiting stage. In other words, the plant's flowering, beginning to form fruit.
7 years ago, the Australian regulator put restrictions on when and how 2,4-D high volatile esters could be sprayed. But the complaints of drift continued. Curiously, the day Four Corners was to interview the regulator, it announced a proposed ban on high volatile esters.
We're going through a show cause process to ask industry to come back to us with why these chemicals should still be available, and from then we will make the decision about the future of the chemicals in Australia.
But some believe a ban will not go far enough, as there are other forms of 2,4-D that may drift that are still on the market. The APVMA started a review of 2,4-D in 1995 because of concerns about its potential harmful effects on humans, animals, and the environment. It's yet to finish that review.
Why do you announce that you're going to review a chemical in 1995, but you don't do anything until 2006?
As I mentioned, I can't comment on what was behind that announcement. Typically when you come to chemical review, if you're concerned about a chemical, you do announce to the public that you are looking at such a chemical.
11 years ahead of time.
That sort of time frame is perhaps unusual.
Australia's regulator must walk a fine line between arming farmers with the best tools and protecting the community from potentially dangerous chemicals. Today, there's almost 10,000 agricultural chemicals used in Australia. Some, like 2,4-D, have been around for generations.
It is not acceptable that chemicals take 10 or 15 years for review when there have been identified problems with them.
What are the risks?
Well, the risks are that unsafe chemicals are being continually put in the environment, being used in farming communities, and we are eating those in the food that we eat.
Some would say the time to take a risk with these old chemicals is over. Certainly Nigel Sinclair and his family believed this. Tragically, Nigel never got the answers he was seeking. He died shortly after our interview.
I'm sure you'll agree with me that it is an unfair equation to lose valuable human life just to get rid of weeds. And that's it for this week's program. Thank you for your time and attention. Until next week and another Aperture, it's goodbye.
This is For a Better Life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, we send our peace and blessings upon all the prophets of Allah, subhanahu wa ta'ala, and especially the last of them, Muhammad al-Mustafa and his progeny, and those companions who followed their path. I'm your host, Sayyid Wahid Alawi, and welcome to another program of For a Better Life, here on IRIB English Radio. We were talking about psychological diseases within our society and within ourselves, and how we should tackle them. We were talking about having mental peace and to be secure in our characteristics. And we also mentioned some verses from the Noble Quran. Let us see what the Quran says when it comes to mental peace. The Quran considers steadiness and security to be the characteristics of those whose hearts are full of faith. Mental peace and security are qualities of those who have faith and who have not drawn a veil of wrongdoing over their faith. Chapter 6, verse 82. Another verse from the Noble Quran says, Lo, fear and sorrow do not affect the friends of God, O dear Allah. Chapter 10, verse 62. In a sermon on the benefits of remembrance of Allah, Imam Ali alayhi salam, the commander of the faithful, he says and describes the characteristics of godly human beings. He says, Allah the Exalted has made His remembrance the light and burnish of the hearts. It is by the means of His remembrance that the hearts recover their hearing after being deaf, regain their sight after being blind, and become soft and tractable after being savage and rebellious. It has always been the case that in periods of spiritual turbulence, from time to time, Allah Almighty has confided His inspiration, His ilham, to the thoughts of His sublime servants and spoken to them through their intellects. The state of people possessing faith is not at all comparable with the condition of materialistic and irreligious persons in encounter with life's different troubles and difficulties, and its bitter experiences, for the two are as part as the earth and the sky. When you have faith, dear brothers and sisters, that faith will help you.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
When you have faith, that faith will give you the power you need to rely upon another power, which is the main source of all creation, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You know that everything would go well. You know that He is the all-watchful, huwa al-qareeb. He's the one who sees everything. So all your difficulties is present in front of Him. The state of people possessing faith is not at all comparable with the condition of those who do not have faith. During the Prophet's time, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, one of the Muslim women in Medina received the news of the loss of three of her close relatives in the Battle of Uhud. She set out on a camel to the scene of battle to bring the bodies of the martyrs. Having led the lifeless and bloody bodies of her dear ones on the camel, she was returning to Medina when on the way she met one of the wives of the Holy Prophet. The Prophet's wife, who was concerned about the Prophet's welfare, asked her if she knew anything in this regard. That woman, as she held the reins of her camel and blood dripped to the ground from the bodies that it carried, answered with a serenity and calmness that sprung from her firm and steady faith, "I have glad news for you. The Prophet hasn't suffered any harm in the battle, and every lesser grief is tolerable in front of such a great and precious blessing." May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala bless this woman companion of the Prophet for her faith and belief. The Prophet's wife asked her, "Whose bodies are these?" She answered, "One of them is my husband's, another is that of my son, and the third one belongs to my brother. I am taking them to Medina to bury them." What agent except fate could give such indescribable serenity and calm to this soul. Another writer by the name of Rousseau says, "If we were immortal, we would all be miserable. No doubt it is hard to die, but it is sweet to think that we shall not live forever, and that a better life would put an end to the sorrows of this world. If we had the offer of immortality here below, who would accept the sorrowful gift? What resources, what hopes, what consolation would be left against the cruelties of fate and man's injustice? The ignorant man never looks before. He knows little of the value of life and does not fear to lose it. The wise man sees things of greater worth and prefers them to it. Half knowledge and sham wisdom set us thinking about death and what lies beyond it. And they who create the worst of our ills." These thoughts, dear brothers and sisters, that what lies beyond death, these are the ones who create the worst of our ills if we are ignorant, if we have not studied or done our research or have asked those who know about what lies after death. That ignorance would give us anxiety and other stress and psychological diseases. The wise man bears life's ills all the better because he knows he must die. So one day, all of us would die. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. From Allah have we come, and to Allah shall we return. That's all for today's program, dear brothers and sisters. I hope that you enjoyed the program. Till next time, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon all of you.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. All I need. All I need. It's all I need. It's all I need. It's all I need. All I need. All I need. All I need. Oh, oh, oh.
It's all I need.
Is all I need.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.